Welcome to the Impact That Equals podcast, in which we explore the impact investment industry, what it is, why it matters, and how it is playing a key role in reshaping how business is undertaken in many parts of the world. My name is Andrew Murray Watson, and today, in this very first podcast in this series, I will be talking to someone who was there before the phrase impact investing was a thing. Before I introduce my guest, a little factoid for you. Did you know that today's global population of 8 billion or so represents 7% of the total number of people who have ever lived since the first Homo sapiens walked the planet over a quarter of a million years ago? Trying to imagine the scale of humanity today is a tough proposition, but it is something that my first guest is all too familiar. Andy Cooper is the Chief Executive of Leapfrog Investments. Andy founded Leapfrog in 2007 as an investment vehicle for his profit with purpose philosophy. And today, Leapfrog proudly proclaims the fact that the company's investees reach over 5% of those 8 billion Homo sapiens in our wandering open planet. That's about 450 million people, of which 300 million people live on less than $11.20 per day. Within a decade of being founded, Leapfrog was ranked by Fortune magazine as one of the top five companies to change the world, alongside household names like Apple and Novartis. Leapfrog's investees across healthcare, financial services, and climate solutions directly support nearly 230,000 jobs and livelihoods. And in 2022, in the Queen's Birthday Honours, Andy was appointed an Officer of the Order of Australia for distinguished service to the impact investing industry, to global business leadership, and to financial inclusion. Andy, firstly, welcome to the Impact Equals podcast. It's fantastic to have you here all the way from Australia.
It's great to be on with you today.
Can I start by going back to the beginning? Tell me what drove a young farmer in South Africa to seek a career in the world of global finance and investment.
It wasn't quite that quick, but I grew up in an apartheid South Africa and actually went to the only unsegregated school under apartheid, including with Thabo Mandela. And I was one of the 50,000 people on the Union Building lawns in Pretoria on the day Nelson Mandela was inaugurated. And as I stood there and saw the prisoner become president, I had a sense that the world could be very, very badly structured, and a small group of committed people who persuaded a wider group of committed people could really fundamentally change the world. And I tried multiple creative efforts, founding things, different industries and so on, looking for the thing that could have the greatest impact in terms of changing the world, and eventually came to Leapfrog. But it wasn't a direct journey straight from growing up on a farm to the heights of global finance, that's for sure.
I guess, can you recall what it was like to be Andy Cooper in 2007? What was that sort of, that moment that kind of crystallized the realization that you had to launch Leapfrog?
Well, I'd had a great gift of working with amazing social entrepreneurs like Muhammad Yunus and Faisal Abed, the leaders of the global microcredit movement, and Bill Drayton, who really founded the social entrepreneurship movement. And I could see that the things that scaled most were businesses in terms of having an impact and in terms of being sustainable. And as I looked around, I saw that there was money flowing into microfinance, there was some money flowing into renewables, but really nothing existed for the broader categories of businesses that changed the world, that had that fundamental purpose of uplifting millions and millions of people. And then in January 2007, I saw this guy called Steve Jobs launch the iPhone. And because I had seen it on the ground in Bangladesh and elsewhere, I realized that this would mean that billions of people joined the grid. So I didn't predict streaming video or TikTok, to be clear, but I knew that 4 billion people, half of humanity, would want to rise. And the first thing they'd need to do is access financial services. They would need to make payments or save so they could send their daughter to school. The second thing they would need to do is access healthcare, because the first thing someone does with their income is spend it on healthcare for your kids or your grandmother or whoever it is. And the third thing that people would need would be energy, because of course, energy drives everything. It's the light so that the daughter can study at night. It's the vehicle to get her to the school. So we thought wealth, health, and energy should be at the root of everything. And those were the businesses that we should focus on.
Tell me about the process and the kind of the first stage in setting up LeapFrog. I mean, you presumably had to knock on the doors of some institutions whose capital you wanted. I mean, did they think you were sort of talking Martian to them? Because I mean, back in 2007, this is a pretty novel approach, right, to investment.
Absolutely. So the term impact investing did not exist. There were a number of what you would now call non-profit impact investors or players that are not seeking to optimize commercial returns alongside social impact. And we felt that there was room for an offering that had profit with purpose, which is still the phrase on the back of every LeapFrog business card, that could offer not just no trade-off between profit and purpose, but a synergy where, because the companies were producing outsized profit, they could attract a lot of capital and drive themselves to significant scale. So we decided to focus on growth equity, where you could take the very good ideas and the relatively small businesses that were out there and really scale them to reach those 4 billion underserved people. And we decided to focus initially on insurance and savings and pensions, those protective financial services that enable people to steadily rise and not fall back into poverty as they rise every few years. And then progressively, as LeapFrog grew, we set out to raise $100 million, we raised $135, our next fund was $400, then over $700, and so on. And eventually we were raising the billions. As we grew, we moved into these adjacencies within wealth, within healthcare, and within climate solutions. And we were able to provide an offering to investors that could promise both outsized returns and a distinctive scale of impact.
A lot of people would say that there must be some sort of inherent trade-off between purpose and profit. What do you say to those people?
The wonderful thing is I used to say to them, we'll show you that there isn't. And now I can say it's demonstrably true that there isn't and that there is a synergy. And when you see the world's largest private equity and investment shops barreling into impact and raising billions of dollars for it, you know that they're not doing that entirely because of love and mission. Clearly, what has happened is that impact has become from or close to zero when I got going, a $1 trillion industry that is rich in data that demonstrate both the financial and the impact rewards of investing and dispenses with this illusion that so many of us grew up under, that you had to either be Mother Teresa or a rapacious capitalist. I really believe some of the most talented and exciting people in the world are committed to money with meaning. They want to build resources for their families, of course, but they also want to impact on their communities. And I've seen this across the 30 markets in which LeapFrog operates, as well as the many investors with which we collaborate, over 100 investors that LeapFrog has. I've seen that people are able to achieve this synergy, this idea of money with meaning, profit with purpose, and it's made them both more fulfilled and more commercially rewarded.
So how much profit is enough in that equation? I mean, is there a sort of a threshold beyond which the excess should go into kind of turbocharging the purpose? I mean, is there sort of an equation that you guys work to internally?
These are great questions. And, you know, I started my studies, really, my PhD was under a Nobel laureate in poverty economics, Amartya Sen. And his ultimate focus was, to what extent are low-income people getting actual well-being and freedoms out of the activity you're engaged in? That's the true test. There isn't a magic equation. That's the outcome that you're seeking. And so when we look at what we do, we say, are the products and services being delivered by our companies quality, affordable, and relevant for low-income people? Are they essential services of quality reaching the right population and enabling that population? And we have a whole ream of ways of measuring that. Now, if we can serve 10 million people with an insurance policy and make a dollar a month out of that, instead of serving a million people, we make more profit. And that's a fantastic thing. It means 9 million more low-income people get services. As it happens, LeapFrog's companies are approaching reaching 200 million people with insurance. And so if that grows and we make yet more profit for our investors because more and more low-income people are getting what they need, I think that's fantastic. And it allows us to attract more capital to then invest in other insurance businesses and all sorts of other businesses. So the whole thing here is to dispense with this trade-off mentality and seek something that works across, right from the investors, the major institutional investors and family offices and so on, right down through to the low-income person, and make sure that all the way along that chain, everybody is benefiting.
But isn't that just good investment business? I mean, does that have to be good impact investment business? I mean, isn't that what investors look to do anyway?
Our ultimate aim is that this becomes a market norm. But currently, there are some real failures in terms of investors actually being committed to intentional quantification of their impact up front, reporting and working on it all the way through, and then independently auditing their results at the end. And this has now been captured in something that we helped create, which are the operating principles for impact management that came out of the IFC World Bank and now sit with the Global Impact Investing Network and are endorsed by over 100 major managers and allocators of assets. So LeapFrog is one of only 6 groups on earth that scores a perfect score across all the operating principles for impact management, which means that there are thousands of other groups that are at various stages of working towards quantifying your impact up front, measuring and creating value and reporting on it all the way through and auditing at the end. And when we get to a point where everybody is doing that, then of course we have very different capital markets. Then we've opened the gates of the capital markets, those trillions of dollars, to really purpose-driven businesses and change the way we measure and do business. But right now, there's very little understanding of who institutions are serving, whether the products they're providing are essential, and how impact and investment work together to generate both positive social and financial outcomes. It's improving, with impact having become a $1 trillion industry. It's certainly improving. And the IFC has estimated it may go to 26 trillion. I think it could go beyond that. It could eat a huge portion of the capital markets because, as you say, ultimately it's good business. As a strategy, it works. I know it from the inside after 16 years of building LeapFrog. And so I think it's inevitable it'll come. We just need to adopt a new set of metrics and measurements and ways of doing business that allow us to have this new world.
I mean, is that process to have sufficient momentum now that it's just going to inevitably happen, that impact investing is going to move away from being an alternative asset class to being the norm? Or what else needs to be put in place to see that happen?
Well, we're still, I believe, in relatively early days, in the sense that impact has reached a scale at $1 trillion where it's now relevant to the markets and gets the attention of the largest asset managers and investors in the world. At the same time, $1 trillion is actually a relatively small part of the current capital markets. And like any change, I don't think it is inevitable. It depends on the various champions and success stories that are out there. And it depends on making the case, both in substance and in rhetoric, out there in the world so that others move towards this. So we are at an absolutely pivotal moment, and I think your podcast speaks to this, where impact is on track to become a new norm, but it's going to require an enormous amount of effort from the early movers and then the fast followers who have come in so far.
And do you think it would sort of encompass every sector out there? I mean, it's hard to imagine impact money going into oil and gas, for example, or mining or another extractive industry. I mean, or do you think it will sort of swallow up these things and reshape the way those industries are operated?
Well, it's very interesting that the opportunities that are being seen in impact are just growing and growing. So yes, there are huge opportunities in renewables, but for instance, also enormous opportunities in decarbonization. And I do believe that increasingly the capital will flow to where it's well treated and where it has the best impacts. So, for example, Leapfrog recently launched a climate strategy that focuses on getting that half of humanity, those 4 billion people currently excluded, the essential tools, the climate solutions and tools they need as they rise. And there was a very interesting quote by Sir Martin Rees, the Astronomer Royal in the UK, who said whether the UK hits its targets is irrelevant compared to whether those 4 billion people adopt carbon-intensive or carbon-light technologies and lifestyles. So if you think about that opportunity to help those billions of people rise, yes, you can certainly have a lot of capital flow into decarbonizing wealthy countries, but the greatest growth in investment opportunity and so on is going to come from those 4 billion as they attain a level of closer to middle class security. And where the opportunity lies is to give those people everything that people in the developed world have, but far faster. And that really is the idea of leapfrogging, of enabling those people with strong tools to do so. So as we look to our strategy, we see areas like mobility, those two-wheelers and three-wheelers and four-wheelers that people use for school and work. We see it in agriculture and food. We see it in the built environment, and we see it in appliances like clean cook stoves. So there are a whole lot of these areas where there are, frankly, trillions to be made with serving these underserved needs currently. And that's why I believe that the capital markets will move increasingly in this direction, even as they also focus on areas like decarbonization and creating forms of energy that are less carbon intensive.
Because impact investment is very much seen in an emerging markets context, right? And that's what you do in terms of lifting people out of poverty and creating a burgeoning middle class in some of the fastest growing emerging economies in the world. But impact investing, to really become mainstream, has to take root in the US, right? In the UK, in the EU, in China, in the developed world, where, particularly in the context of like the climate emergency, there needs to be much greater flows of capital into, for example, decarbonization.
Absolutely. And one of the striking things is that now more capital is flowing into developed markets impact than developing markets impact. And that's because often capital is more comfortable with putting itself somewhere nearby rather than far away. So one of the things we have to make sure of is that we have enough capital flowing to both. I liken this in climate to people bailing out the bath, which is the carbon in the developed world, with a thimble quite steadily, but the giant taps are running as all these people adopt new lifestyles and new technologies. So unless we can stop the taps of bad technologies and carbon intensive lifestyles, we're going to have no chance of staying at under 1.5 growth in climate temperature, let alone perhaps 2. So as we think about this, we need to ensure that globally, capital is going into both the developed and the developing markets, but certainly where we find it most exciting to invest is in developing markets. As you said, major economies there. We currently invest in countries like India, Indonesia, Vietnam, Nigeria, Kenya. These are countries that on average are growing at 5% a year per the IMF this year versus 1% in the OECD. And then when we dig down into the industries we invest in, like financial services and healthcare and climate, we find that those are growing at a significantly greater pace than the broader economy. And then when we dig down into the businesses serving those emerging consumers who are 90% of the population, we find that they're growing faster than the average in their industry. So there's growth on growth on growth. And then we pick winners in that category and we back them. So on average, we have found across the life of Leapfrog and all our portfolios, our companies grow at 24% a year. That's revenue growth each year. And collectively now, those companies have $4.4 billion in revenue. So there is serious business to be done in these markets and a scale of growth and opportunity that is incredibly difficult to find in the developed world. Now, there's certain things that you may regard as safer or more familiar in the developed world, but in a world of inflation and of suppressed rates and so on in certain areas, like interest rates and so forth, you may find that it is much wiser and safer to actually invest where you're getting very substantial growth.
Your investee companies have grown an average of 24% a year since you invested in them, according to your latest figures. How does that translate into return on investment for your investors and your funds?
Well, we pursue top-tier private equity returns alongside outsized impact. It's very simple. So our investors should be looking at us through their investment committees and deciding that this is a really exciting investment opportunity, as well as a really exciting impact opportunity, that it's a strategic window into this new future that is coming. And certainly we've often been that gateway, that window for people, so that they've been able to take the first step with a very established asset manager that has billions under management and that is operating across multiple markets very safely and securely and with limited leverage. So we believe that there is a moment now where there will be an increasing entry of various players into the space. And those of us who have earned our stripes, who have made errors, who have learned our way into being both authentic and secure on the one hand, and scaled and commercial on the other, will reap particular rewards, because that's what investors are looking for. They're looking for a high level of safety with returns, with authenticity of impact.
And you mentioned that there's obviously a lot of money flowing into impact investment. Is it increasingly competitive for you and for other entrants coming into the market to find, you know, to win those opportunities? I mean, how much engineering do you have to do on the ground to increase the pipeline, I suppose, of investable companies?
Well, I'll say three quick things about that. The first is I've just emerged from an investment committee where our problem is too many good deals. So we're having to have that struggle of killing deals where there are just such fantastic opportunities. So the lived experience is that there are enormous opportunities out there if you know where to look. Second point I'd make is we know where to look because we have teams on the ground. So if we're investing in insurance in Africa, one of my partners who leads that was the former CEO of Old Mutual Insurer, one of the largest insurers on the continent. If we're investing in healthcare, our healthcare leaders are MDs, PhDs, or both in healthcare and living in the markets and with deep knowledge of those markets. And I guess the third thing is to say, as a result, we don't worry about competition in the space because we think there are so many opportunities. And you can go back to my launching Leapfrog with President Clinton eventually in 2008. And we stood up, him and I, and said, we call for the launch of 100 Leapfrogs because we really felt like it would be great to have an industry. Because as you have an industry, you have syndication, you have collaboration, you exit to each other, you jointly acquire things. And it becomes a rich tapestry. And we've actually found that as more and more people have entered the space, and there are now hundreds of impact managers, whereas we really felt like there were just a few, or we were often alone in the universe in what we were doing previously. Now with these hundreds, we feel that there is a community that buoys us and where we can do so much more. Ultimately, my belief is that you need to be leading in a very fast growing field with many people who are exciting crossing frontiers together, rather than standing in a little narrow space and defending yourself against all possible comers.
And what's the collaboration look like to Leapfrog? I mean, do you say we're going to invest in these four companies, but these three are also really good, but we can't invest in them this month? You know, go and speak to whoever else.
Sure, we certainly do that. But also, we've just done a $330 million deal with several other investors to acquire a stake in Sun King, which is the largest pay-as-you-go solar player in Africa and indeed much of the world. And that is bringing over 94 million people have accessed solar and energy through this player. And we're scaling that. Just think of that map of Africa that is so dark at night being lit up. That's an opportunity that exists because our capital can go in, but also others' capital can go in, with several development finance institutions also invested in a company called Good Life in Kenya that is now started as a small chain of pharmacies and is now the largest healthcare provider in East Africa. It serves millions of people with essential medicines, with telemedicine, with nutrition, with pathology. This is an incredible company that only exists because several of us with both debt and equity could get behind it. And I could tell you about other cases in India where we co-built the largest health insurance and insurance brokerage in India with the Mahindra Group. So as more and more people, the third largest in that country, so as more and more people enter the space, more and more institutions, you find that you can put more capital where it is needed and you can collaborate to drive much more exciting outcomes. And I think we are at just an incredibly important moment for that, because remember, in Silicon Valley, it's not that people have better ideas. It's that they have an ecosystem that helps their ideas go from inception through to being Apple. So what is starting to develop is more and more of an ecosystem around purpose-driven companies. And we have been part, as have others, of growing that ecosystem. We think we provide this essential point of scale-up growth capital that takes people from serving hundreds of thousands to serving tens of millions. As companies and institutions. But we think that the whole ecosystem is developing, and we're very keen to support others who are doing so. And we often introduce investors or companies to their counterparts.
What do you think the role of DFI should be in the impact investment space?
I owe a great deal to the major development finance institutions who were among the early backers of LeapFrog and have backed us through multiple vintages of our funds. We would not have raised billions without the tens of millions that they provided at catalytic moments. I think there is a profound role to back early stage funds and companies, much like we were some 15 years ago. But I also think that development finance institutions have learned that those institutions that reliably deliver both the returns and impact need backing as they continue to develop new products. And so whether it's new companies or new funds in new areas, for us, it was energy, other people, it would be areas like education or food and agriculture, where development finance institutions should be encouraging those who do deliver to deliver more widely and to offer yet more product. And in that way, to crowd in the private sector players with that catalytic capital. So I think one of the evolutions development finance institutions have gone through is to see sometimes small is beautiful, but sometimes big is the way to take leaps into new domains where you have a really solid platform that you've had success in and you can leap from there with a partner who you know well.
Can I just ask about your the way you measure impact? I mean, it's quite a difficult subject, isn't it? Because it's you're basically, there's a requirement to kind of measure good, isn't there? Measure the sort of the positive outcomes of your investments. And it seems to be very hard that to, you know, how do you quantify somebody having a better job against removing a ton of carbon from the atmosphere? I mean, it's a really difficult, thorny subject, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think the very good thing about impact, though, is we've had enormous discipline from the early days in setting up a set of metrics that are much more defensible than many of the metrics out there in areas that are broader, such as ESG, which is still a very good thing. So we initially set out to say, let's focus on the real population served here by LeapFrog companies. So there are World Bank and other definitions of what low income is. And that is a person living on under $11.20 per person of income in the household per day. And then the second thing we asked is, are the products being provided by LeapFrog companies quality, affordable, and relevant? Now, this is not some broad qualitative notion. This is about established metrics. In insurance, you can ask, what is the renewal ratio? In other words, how many people come back and buy the product? Because that is a social metric as well as a financial metric. You can measure how much of the pool goes back to the people who are paying the insurance premiums. And there are some global accepted benchmarks for that. So we and our actuaries determined there are a set of metrics that establish whether the product and service that people are getting is quality, affordable, and relevant. And if you're getting that to low-income people, that empowers them. And then we've been able to go out with our customer experience team and say, how does it actually affect them? How does it convert into well-being and freedoms? So as we've pioneered this, we've developed a system called FIRM, which is Financial, Impact, Innovation, and Risk Management, FIRM. And the metrics that we use speak to all of those things because we think you need an integrated metric set. You don't want management teams running after metrics that send them in all sorts of different directions. And the great thing is that we require management teams to monitor these and drive these metrics upfront. So instead of it being a tick box exercise at the end of the quarter done by an analyst, it becomes something with which the leadership team drives the business and on which you can compensate them. So that really embeds impact at the heart of a business's strategy and at the heart of our financial impact, innovation, and risk management reporting to our investors. And this is something we've now seen become more widely adopted in the industry, in which others have also innovated in these areas. And today, there is an accepted set of metrics called the IRIS Plus metrics. There are the operating principles, which is the process for how you apply it. And increasingly, there are benchmarks as well coming out of the Global Impact Investing Network. So the mythology of the past that, oh, this is so hard to measure, everybody differs and so on, is increasingly gone. Increasingly, there are no excuses for people. Now, if you want to choose to make a contribution in clean energy, great. Just like if you want to start a clean energy company rather than a healthcare company, all power to you. So it's not really about trading off goods because some funds and some companies will focus on one and some will focus on the other and some will focus on three like LeapFrog does. That doesn't matter. What matters is what you are focusing on, you're measuring in globally recognized terms with a process that you're auditing in globally recognized terms, and you're accounting to your investors and to the world as to how you're doing that.
We ask each of our guests on this series the same question. What are some of the key trends that will emerge in the impact investment space over the next few years?
First of all, from a sectoral perspective, I think financial inclusion has a long way to run. If you see India and others doing unique identification, personalized mobile wallets, provision of pensions, insurance, savings, credit, payments into those wallets, there is a vast path there to many, many more people being included. And once those rails are built for people to interact financially, many other industries will follow. The first, of course, will be healthcare, and the next after that will be energy. Those are people's most fundamental needs. And then you'll have areas like education and so on, mushrooms. So I think this is a very exciting moment for those three industries, wealth, health, and energy. Secondly, I think we'll see the use of data and AI increasingly. Many of our companies are using these technologies to serve their customers ever better and to create new products and underwrite in real time. So LeapFrog now has 450 million people reached through our portfolio companies, and that collectively is a data set that can be mined to create ever better product for those people, most of whom are low income, and to create massive competitive advantage for the businesses that we back. And I think we'll see that coming through a lot more. And finally, I think there is a race to the top with measurement. So previously, we were working incredibly hard to create the operating principles for impact management that create a base for everybody. So there's not impact washing. Well, the worry increasingly is impact light, because so many people are coming in and now trying to tick the boxes that we jointly helped create. So what we're seeing now is impact depth and impact authenticity are becoming a source of competitive advantage. And my hope is that many players start trying to compete with LeapFrog and others who are doing this in a way we think is authentic and excellent. And there's increasing competition with investors and also with potential portfolio companies to say, hey, this is best in class. This adds a lot of value to both investors and to companies. And you should be doing this too. And the more and more they do it, the more and more it becomes a market norm. I think markets often function by envy. So having great exemplars out there is really starting to change the game. And I think that should give us all great hope as LeapFrog works towards reaching 1 billion people at the end of this decade with essential services. We hope not only will we do that, but that will be an encouragement, a support to others, so that all of those 4 billion people who are currently excluded get much more included in this economy. And in so doing, we grow the global economy very substantially.
Andy, thank you again for your time. It's been fascinating having this conversation. And thank you to all our listeners for tuning in.